Dr. Trevor Cates. Welcome to the Spa Doctor Show, where we talk about health tips and strategies to help you be smart, sexy, and strong. On today's show, I have a different kind of guest than what you're used to. I have as my guest, Manish Sethi. Manish is the founder and CEO of Pavlok, the wearable wristband that trains your habits. He was the keynote speaker for London's Royal Society of Medicine and has written 4 books, including an international bestseller. After studying at Stanford University with habit professor BJ Fogg, Manish started multiple companies while traveling the world and helped launch numerous New York Times bestsellers, including The 4-Hour Chef by Tim Ferriss. On today's show, Manish shares with us how to hack your brain and form good habits, the differences between negative and positive reinforcements. He explained what micro habits are and how they can help. And he tells us about his new wearable device, Pavlok, and how it can help us form good habits and break bad ones. We want to do that, right? So enjoy the show. Welcome to the show, Manish.
Hi, Trevor.
Hi. Yeah, it's great to have you on. So I want to start off with your background. How did you end up with this interest in breaking habits? How did you end up on this path?
Sure. So, I mean, I'm severely ADD. So ever since I was young, I had trouble focusing. I always had trouble being productive. I'm extremely good at getting things done for the last minute, but I'm very bad at just focusing on what I want to focus on. So a lot of what I've been doing has been, I'm building devices that help you train your habits right now. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that I'm trying to rein in my own bad habits. So particularly, I used to do experiments on my blog, Hack the System, where I would test out different ways to stay productive, different ways to just be able to. I was traveling with the blog, and it's very hard to keep a routine when you're traveling. So I would figure out ways and experiments to keep me productive while traveling. And I found one in particular was extremely effective. I started hiring people to sit down next to me and basically watch me, be my accountability partner. And if I got off task, make sure I get back on task using any means necessary. So my most famous experiment, I hired a girl to slap me in the face every time I used Facebook. But what was interesting was the results. Like the act of having somebody sit down next to you and you say to them, hey, I need to finish this article, this blog post, and this email. And I need it to be done today. And if I don't finish all three, you don't get paid. Like having that accountability basis. And do whatever it takes, you know, be my nanny, be my nag, I don't care, just make sure it gets done. The ability to set a commitment to somebody else and have them keep you accountable is kind of like outsourcing your willpower. It was like hiring somebody else to be my willpower for me. And I found that was so effective and the public really responded to it. I wrote a blog post that went insanely viral. And a few weeks later, I said to my friend, like, dude, we should make a dog collar that just shocks us every time we use Facebook, save money on the actual Craigslist slapper. And that was where the idea for my company Pavlok came from.
Awesome. And you studied at Stanford University with a habit professor. Can you tell, what was that like? What did you learn from doing that?
Sure. So I studied under Professor BJ Fogg, who's really well known for persuasive technology and habit, tiny habits he's well known for. So I didn't study psychology with him, which is interesting. I studied Facebook marketing with him, of all things. He focused on persuasive technology, which is technologies that can change human behavior. And my brother used to work in his lab for many years. I knew him not very well, but I knew him, like we would have once a month meetings. I was very interested in his work. But when I went into his class was about let's build apps for Facebook. And before the Facebook app platform came out, they brought in Facebook employees to teach us how to use the API before anybody had access to it. And they allowed us, and Stanford allowed us to put ads on it and earn money without having to pay Stanford a fee, which is rare. And what happened is because it was like a gold rush, like the class, I think on average, the average team in the 3-month class was generating like $65,000 of revenue or something. Like each, just kids in a classroom are earning tens to twenties of thousands of dollars in like days from this new Facebook apps platform. And it blew my mind at like how powerful the Facebook platform was and also the leverage that technology gives. And what was cool about the product was I ended up getting to go to Finland to speak about my thesis in the class. So I gave a Facebook marketing the new model of acquisition or something. I forget what I wrote. But I gave it to Professor Fogg took us and the people who wrote the best articles to Finland to give a presentation there. And that was pretty cool. So it was like being able to spend a lot of time with him one-on-one became, I learned a lot from that interaction. That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic. So you talked to me about micro habits. What are those? What are micro habits?
Sure. So there's a big difference between forming good habits and breaking bad habits. In particular, the way that they work in the brain is different. The way that you solve them is different. And the way that they're actually kind of almost opposite from each other. So when you're trying to form a good habit, what you need to do is add operant conditioning. That's adding rewards, adding potential penalties if you fail, and adding accountability, having motivation. The function for creating for changing your behavior is based on two variables. And the variables are your ability to do the task, so how easy is a task, and your motivation to do the task. So you can increase your motivation artificially. You can increase your motivation by, if I go to the gym today, I get to eat a cookie afterwards. Or if I go to the gym today, I get to buy myself a big, gift for myself. Or if I go to the gym today, my friend will post on Facebook. Well, I have to post on Facebook that I didn't go to the gym. Like, those are all ways to increase motivation. But what's really important, what micro habits focus on, is how do you increase the ability. So if you're highly motivated, but the action is really hard, you might not do it. If you're highly motivated and the action is really easy, you'll probably do it. So thinking about if you have to go to the gym, but you don't have access to a gym, you've never signed up for a gym, you don't have gym clothes, no matter how motivated you are, it's just hard. It's really hard to go to the gym. But you can increase, the trick here is to identify the habits you want to form and break it down to the smallest core denominator of what that habit is. And this is what we call micro habits. Our micro habits is based on BJ Fogg's tiny habits, although we combine it with accountability. So you don't have to floss your teeth. You have to floss one tooth. You don't have to go work out at the gym for half an hour. You have to swipe your card at the gym and go home. The act of breaking a bad habit, breaking down a habit into its congruent parts, is how you can increase the ability scale. So if someone who is reading who's listening to this podcast right now wants to change a habit, for example, really common ones towards this time of the year, let's get in shape, let's eat better, I want to quit smoking, the New Year's resolutions, the standard ones. What they first want to do is think about, first of all, how much do they really want it? And do they want the results or do they want the lifestyle? The hard thing to understand is that most people focus on how can I lose 30 pounds? And it always happens. You lose your 30 pounds and then you celebrate and then it's over. You never show up to the gym again because you focused on the goal. There's nothing wrong with that if that's what you want to do, but you need to know that what is about to happen, which is that you're going to get there and then you're going to look back a year later and be like, damn, I was so healthy. Why did I quit? The better way to focus on it is to focus on the process. So if you say, I will go to the gym every day for the next year or however much you want to go, I guarantee that I will be at the gym. If I hit my goal, I'll have my intention of losing 30 pounds, but that's not the habit I'm forming. The habit I'm forming is just the process of being in the gym. I'm the kind of person who will go there and exercise, not just tomorrow, not just until I'm 30 pounds lighter, but forever. That's the kind of person I am. That's the habit I want to instill. Then you can focus less on speed and more on process, more on building a habit. So this is what this actually came out of a BJ Fogg did a secret experiment where he went to Weight Watchers without telling them who he was to see how he said something really interesting to me. It was if you have 20 points on Weight Watchers to eat each day and they give you 19 and you get to the end of the day and you've only eaten 13 points. The average solution is to celebrate. Hey, I hit 13 points. I'm doing great today. Maybe tomorrow I get to 12. He said, no. Instead, eat 6 more points. Go out there and eat up to 19. Because the slower it takes for you to achieve your goal, the longer the habit will last. And I found that to be really interesting.
That is really interesting. And I, you know, I noticed that with weight loss. There's so many weight loss programs out there, like lose 30 pounds in 3 days or, you know, something crazy. And, but, you know, it's not something that people can sustain. They can't maintain that. Whereas the people that gradually lose weight, they lose a little bit at a time, they're much easier. It's much easier for them to keep that weight off. I mean, of course, you know, you don't want to take 10 years to lose 10 pounds, but you know, there's a balance between that.
Yeah, there's a balance. And also, like, it's the fact that it took you 10 years to lose 10 pounds means that in those 10 years, you didn't gain weight.
Yeah,
which
that's
is a
true.
Big thing, right? So like if your goal is to fit into this shape or to get to this specific number, you're just setting yourself up for failure. I mean, I'll tell you right now, like I had a bunch of experiments on my blog where I was losing extreme amounts of weight for a TV show and for, I lived in the wilderness for a while with no food or anything to survive on. And I came back, what I thought the leanest I'd ever been, I weighed 167 pounds. And this year I started weightlifting. And I look back at my pictures of me at 167, which is my leanest. And I look scrawny. I look terrible. And right now I'm 184, 183, and I'm 20 pounds heavier-ish. I'm 20 or so pounds heavier, and I am significantly better looking. Like, the frame is better, at least personally.
Yeah, I think you look great.
Yeah, no, thank you. I was hoping you would say that.
Yeah.
And I kept that for so long. But no, it's like, it's about the weight is a number, but the process is more important. Like, I mean, I don't want to lie. I've, ever since I came back from Mindshare, I fell off the bandwagon. I stopped exercising, and I've been exercising at the gym 3 days a week for 6 months. And I was looking back on this and I was wondering, what happened? What happened? What happened? What happened? Why am I not going to the gym? I'm just not motivated. Why am I not going? It was so easy for 6 months. And I realized I had made a bet at the beginning of the year that I would squat 315 pounds or else I had to pay $100 to the George W. Bush Public Library, which I didn't want to do. And I had hit 315 the day before I came to Mindshare. And then I went to Mindshare and the goal was done. So it was like, there's no reward for going to the gym anymore. I've lost the motivation. If instead I had kept the bet as I will go to the gym at least for 30 seconds for the next year, at least 3 times a week, otherwise I have to pay whatever amount, $100 to the George W. Bush Library, I would have easily kept going. So that's been very interesting to me for like the future. How do I optimize my newer habits depending on what I want to do?
Yeah, that is that interesting. And you also just, what you just mentioned is donating money to something you didn't want to donate money to. So tell us why you wanted to do that.
Sure. Well, this is the, like, all right, different people work different ways, and men and women say different things, and different people are, I'll kind of say this. I think everyone is more motivated by negative reinforcement than positive reinforcement. Negative reinforcement is the fear of loss. So for example, Dr. Trevor, if you told me right now, Manish, I will pay you $10 if you do 20 push-ups. It's very unlikely that I would get up and do 20 push-ups. You know, I like $10, but it doesn't really mean that much to me. On the other hand, if you told me, Manish, if you don't do 20 push-ups, you'll have to pay me $10. There's no chance in hell I wouldn't be on the floor right now doing push-ups. Like, the act of the fear of loss is far more motivational. And they showed us in a few studies. I just got off a call with Ari Mizell today, who talked about one study where they said, like, all right, if they asked people who were buying movie tickets to a performance or a theater, to a movie show, people who were buying tickets to a movie, they said, okay, if you found out that you lost, that you had a $10 bill in your pocket and you were going to buy a movie, going to the movie theater, and you found out on your way to the movie theater that that $10 bill fell out of your pocket, would you still buy a ticket to the movie? And they said, yeah, sure. Okay, I lost $10, but it's not related. Then they said, okay, if you had bought a movie ticket at home for $10 and then you went to the movie theater and lost the movie ticket on your way, would you pay $10 to buy another ticket? And no one said yes. Everyone said, no, I don't want that. There's no difference.
Right.
The rational brain would say that's $10 and that's $10. There's no change here. But the human brain is not rational. And the human basal ganglia, where your habits are stored, your reptilian brain, that part is far more motivated by this fear of loss. So the act of a bet is one of the most powerful techniques I've ever trained with. It's so powerful. I can't even explain how powerful it is. I've turned it into a superpower. Learning how effective this was and harnessing it has changed my productivity in ways that I can't even, I can definitely explain it, but not in the time allotted. It's like, basically, I used to just not know what to do. There's always a lack of knowing what to do. In any given moment, there's a thousand things to do, so I might as well push all of it aside and use Facebook or Reddit. But I started instituting daily bets. So every single day, I have to write down three things that I'll do in the morning. And if I don't, I lose $100 if I don't write the things down. And then I have to do at least two of those three things. If I do two of them, I earn money. If I don't do two of them, I lose money. And if I do all three, I get to reward myself in whatever way it is. And what's really, really interesting is that it's become less of just me finishing two or three things a day. And now it's become a superpower. So it's like, if I put something on my calendar for next Thursday, if I put right now on my calendar for next Thursday, Manish, you will go out and run a 6-mile jog at 9 a.m. And I put that on my calendar because I know that that bet is going to be monitored. I have my assistant checking it. It's all time stamped. It has to be done. And because I have to send proof, or at least I have to send proof of some variety, if that goes on my calendar, there is like almost a 0% chance that I will not go out and run the 6 or 7 miles that I promised to do. It's so the trick was to learn about my own brain. I'm ADD. Everyone's different. Some people are very good at just executing.
A lot of us are ADD today with, you know, at least to some extent because of all the different distractions that we have online and, you know, with our phones and all of that. So to a certain extent, we all are a little bit ADD. Certainly some people are more than others.
Sure. And there's also like, I don't want to say ADD because like there's clinically diagnosed people and then there's like just people who think that like, oh, I can't focus. Right. If you look at like a Myers-Briggs terminology, like the typology of Myers-Briggs, and you look at the last letter, a J versus a judger versus a perceiver. A judger is the kind of person who, if they start doing something, they feel uncomfortable until they finish it. And a perceiver is the kind of person who, if they start doing something, they feel uncomfortable if they finish it. They hate closing loops. They love to start new things and they hate to finish things. If you're a perceiver, which I'm in the highest echelon of, if you're a perceiver, you're the kind of person who will find themselves starting new things and never finishing tasks, opening way too many tabs and never knowing how to end it, writing emails and never finishing the emails. And those are the kind of people in particular who can use this tactic more powerful than anybody else. Adding a bet into their daily routine becomes this real reminder, it's like a beacon of light almost. It's like, even if I get lost deep in 50 tabs, 1,000 Facebook messages, and 50 SMSs, even if I get lost and I don't know what to do next, I can look up and see that bet and remember that I do not want to lose $50 to my friend James. Like, so I better finish this article. Like, that's got to be done. The bet, the act of crafting, of creating bets, is the most effective thing, the most effective technique I've ever learned for productivity and efficiency.
So tell us about Pavlok.
Sure. So Pavlok came out of this whole process, out of this whole self-exploration. I mean, trying to figure out how to make a blog work. And the irony here is like, I write a blog, this Hack the System blog. It's about how to travel, get free plane tickets, how to start new companies in new countries, how to become a famous DJ in Berlin. It's all about all this random stuff. It's almost like a representation of my brain. Nothing is really focused. And along the entire time, I'm trying to essentially figure out a way to my internal modes of success were write 2 articles a week. That's it. That's my internal mode of success. I read this blog for 5 years. I think I hit it twice. I never managed to actually hit 2 articles a week. It's not that much. I was living abroad in any country. I could do whatever I wanted. 24 hours a day, probably 12 online. Couldn't write 2,000 words a week. And that was like intensely self-destructive. It was like, what is wrong with me? Why can't I do this? Like, I should be able to do this. My blog is successful. I'm making money from my blog. I'm supporting my international travel. Like, people look up to me. I have a great email list, but yet I can't even write 2 posts a week. There's nothing worse than like the imposter syndrome of being successful to other people, but internally being a failure. It's the worst. And along the time, I started to notice that I started making bets, they started to be very effective. So effective, it was like, I did this 2-week period where I started doing guest posts. And it was like, if I don't write a guest post by and submit it to the person by Friday at 3 p.m., I owe $500 to my friend. And suddenly, it was done at 2:54 or 2:56. It would be sent out 3 minutes before the due date, but it was done. And, you know, perfect is the enemy of good. So that's, I got started by just noticing this. And then running these experiments was the slapper experiment in particular. Your question was about how I got to Pavlok. Yeah, so my unfocused brain is just jumping all over the place. But what happened throughout the way was I did an experiment where I said, all right, let me hire some girl to slap me in the face every time I use Facebook. Oh, she was actually hired for my first ever guest post where I instituted a bet at the same time. So I hired her to sit down next to me. Every time I used Facebook, she slapped me in the face. I wrote a blog post about it a year and a half later, and it posted online. I was in Argentina at the time, posted it online at like midnight, flew on a plane, landed in New York, and there was like 65 missed calls and like 20 voicemails, and my phone rings, and it was like Owen from BBC, and he was like, hi, are you from NPR? And he's like, hi, are you Manish, the guy who got slapped in the face? Somehow it had gone insanely viral. So I said to myself, that's really interesting. What if we create a dog shock collar that could shock me every time I use Facebook rather than having to hire somebody? Me and a friend got together. We built out this wearable device, this like shocking device that shocked me every time I use Facebook. It took us like a day. We just ripped apart an old dog shock collar and hooked it to the computer and set it to shock me every time I went on Facebook. And I was about to post this video online because I thought it would be viral. And I said to myself, wait, hang on. This is actually really interesting. There's thousands of devices out there that track what we do. What if we could create a wearable device that actually changes what we do? So right here, actually I have it right here. Here is the Pavlok on my wrist. This is a prototype. There are only 40 of these made every single time. And I'm trying to find the module if I have one. I left it in the other room. So the actual device is about this big. And you pop it into an extendable wristband. So like you can put it on your wrist or you can just put it on your arm and just it sits there and it vibrates, beeps, and shocks on command. And what's interesting is for breaking bad habits, this is where it becomes extremely powerful. So do you remember when we were taught to like if you have internal negative thoughts or something, like snap a rubber band against your arm?
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, every time you reach for a cigarette or something like that. I've heard that one too. I mean, not that I've ever smoked, but I've heard that one.
Great. So shock for smoking has been studied quite a bit, and their results are actually insane, like almost unbelievable. And we're experimenting right now to see if the results are reproducible. But so an average person who tries to quit smoking 6 months later, a year later, fewer than 5% of them succeed. If a person uses the best nicotine replacement therapy, you know, nicotine patches plus behavioral therapy, the max they've ever seen is up to a 7.5% success rate on quitting smoking a year later, right? So there's a treatment facility that does shock therapy, and they did it for smoking cigarettes. And they do thousands of people a year. And you essentially have 1 week of tracking how many cigarettes you smoke, followed by 5 days of 20 minutes a day shock. So open the pack of cigarettes, you get shocked. Self-administered for some, and some the nurse presses the button. But self-administered, which is fascinating here, because it's, I'll come back to that. Open the back box of cigarettes, you get shocked. Pull out the box, you get shocked. Bring it to your mouth, you get shocked. Light the cigarette, you get shocked. Puff, you get shocked, right? And they do it for a total of 20 minutes of shock therapy over a 5 or 10 day span. Five times for 20 minutes each. And one more time the week after. So a total of 6 days of 20 minutes of shock. After that, there's like a support phase where they have like weekly phone calls and weekly meetings. And a year later, what would you guess the best success rate could possibly be?
I mean, you know, if you're saying 7% with the other, I would say like 10%. I don't know.
A year later, the average test group smoked 37.1 cigarettes before they came in a day. They were 2-pack-a-day smokers, 37 cigarettes a day. A year later, of the group of people who returned to a non-smoking household, 63% did not smoke a single cigarette. Of the people who returned in total, it was 55%. Greater than 50% of people smoked a single cigarette after years of 2 a day from just a little bit of shock. And what's interesting here is that you can use this to train all sorts of habits. So any sort of like internal, like if you curse, if you bite your nails, if you have internal thoughts like a depressing monologue, often depression is caused by some trigger, some recurring thought. You're like, why do people not give me gifts? And then that becomes like, she got a gift, he got a gift, I should get a gift, I must be a failure, I'm a bad person. A lot of that is often just a habitual brain conversation. And the act of adding a shock at the moment you catch yourself doing that first adds a disincentive to your reptilian brain, which is like, whoa, I shouldn't think about that because otherwise I'll have to get shocked. And secondly, it adds awareness in a way, like a meditation sense. You notice when you're doing it and stop yourself from doing it. So we're now beginning to experiment because the device is here. It's in my wrist. We have a ton of self-shocking devices that we're testing on people who have different use cases. The things they're trying to break. And just from the self perspective, there's a lot that we can do, like a lot. I think that like we're experimenting. The next step is it also is hooked into your, it's hooked up to your phone. So it has Bluetooth connectivity and it connects to any app with an API. So if that is, sounds like gobbledygook, what it means is any other developer, just like the iPhone has the App Store, we can create the Pavlok store. So when do you want to be vibrated, beeped, or shocked? So you might think of something along the lines of, I've already built this out. Whenever I open up too many tabs on Facebook, on my Chrome, Google Chrome, if I open up 9 tabs, it vibrates, 10 tabs, it beeps, 11 tabs, it shocks. So it helps train me to cut back on tab usage. If I spend too much time on unproductive websites, it begins to vibrate, then it begins to beep, and then it begins to shock to remind me to get back on track. So the trick here is with Pavlok is that we've created an ecosystem and a device that allows people to break the habits and stop the actions that they want to stop doing.
Right. So you kind of have control over this yourself to a certain extent. Yes.
Depending on the habit, depending on what you want. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So how do people find out about Pavlok and the work you're doing?
Pavlok is now live. We're raising on crowdfunding, Indiegogo.com. So if you go to Pavlok.com, Pavlok.com, mm-hmm. you will see a link to the most updated purchase button. We're shipping in 2015 early, so in April or so. And it's a pre-order to ship in 2015.
Awesome. So we'll have that link on.
Yeah, and I'll send you also, we prepared we have like a PDF called, we wrote an ebook called Habit Change Theory and Practice, where we delve into the process of micro habits and forming new habits. So I'll send you a link and you can send that to your readers as well.
Great. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. That's fantastic. All right. Well, thank you, Manish. It's been a pleasure having you on and really getting a lot of information about breaking habits and so much information about it. So thank you for your wealth of information and thank you for being slapped and shocked and going through all that so that we can learn from you.
Yeah, I'll take the pain so you guys can enjoy the pleasure. All right.
Okay.
Cheers.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this interview today with Manish Sethi and you got some great information on how to break those bad habits and incorporate healthier habits. So if you want more information about Manish, you can go to his website, pavlok.com, to learn about Pavlok, the wearable device. Or you can also visit my website, drtrevorcates.com, visit the podcast page, and all that information will be under his interview. Thanks again and have a great day.